your host for Lacrosse Talk PM, Rick Sola.
All right, welcome to a Monday, a mere Monday of Lacrosse Talk PM, 608-785-7914. That's the number. Mayor Mitch Reynolds giggling in the background there. How is it going, Mitch?
Good. Good. I realized I wanted to put my headphones or my ear pods in, but I didn't put them in. So at some point, I'm going to try to put them in and switch over the audio. But
for the first time in the history between the two of us doing this show, you're the one not prepared and messing up right.
Yeah, no, I just was like holding the phone to my head, thinking, why am I doing this? This is dumb.
Yeah,
hold on. Let's experiment. You ready?
Yeah, I'll filibuster here for a minute. Mayor Mitch Reynolds is on. He's been the mayor 7 months. His approval rating has crashed since the last week when Republicans swept all the elections across the nation. The liberal mayor Mitch Reynolds. I bring Mitch on Mondays. Right,
what are
before.
You talking about?
You're not supposed to be listening. You're supposed to be doing the headphone thing. So you're not supposed to hear it.
That was it.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, are you using corded? Are you doing it with a cord, or do you got like Bluetooth headphones?
Oh man, I was going to go with the cordless headset, and then that didn't seem to be working today. So I got the cord.
All right, phone doesn't.
I'm corded up.
I got like nine different kinds of Bluetooth headphones that I like to use. Oh, this is a good one for running with Millie, and this one's a good one for just sitting around. Anyway,
none of those fit in my ears, by the way. Like, I have to have the things that fit over my ears because my ears are so oddly misshapen that I got to almost glue the things in my ears for them to stay in there.
Are you one of those weirdos at the Y that's got the huge headphones over their ears when you're trying to work out, too?
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I actually don't. I'm not motivated by music in that way.
No, I don't listen to
headphones. I go without music or anything all the time.
Oh, I'm not listening to music, though. I'm listening to, like, the Levitard Show or something.
The Levitard Show. Sure. All right. Yeah, it'd be more likely to be Dan Patrick for me.
I'm listening to Fact Check.
Are you? Okay. What's going on? What is going on?
Well, okay.
In your world,
I like to start the show off just by doing, whatever sports thing is happening, and we're getting a call, so I'll put this caller on hold just for a minute. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers blew up the entire media world last week.
Yeah, sure.
By being an anti, I don't know. He called himself not an anti-vaxxer, but then he kept talking. I just thought my take on the whole Aaron Rodgers thing is it's interesting that once he's exposed for the not being vaccinated and he's, you know, essentially not suspended, but he can't play anymore. Then he comes out to the world about his stance on all this stuff. And if he really meant what he has to say about all this stuff, he would have done this the whole time. Instead of the second that his wealth and his power are challenged and everybody knows it and are challenging it, that's when he starts fighting back, calling the government a sham and all this stuff. I don't want to get into politics because it's all a sham. Well, it'd be great then, you know, white guy with huge wealth and power and popularity.
Yeah.
If you called the government a sham, your entire career, because, you know, it's not really going to hurt you. But now that it looks like it might hurt his wealth and you know, power, now he comes out and starts talking back.
All right. We know how you feel now.
That's my little take. That's just I've had the weekend to ponder this as my friends argue.
I bet you have.
Well, my friends are all, you know, I got some friends that now love him. I love, you know, they always loved him, right? Like, who in Wisconsin doesn't love Aaron Rodgers? But, you know, I mean, how did you take all that news? Nobody cares about me.
I mean, people do care about you, Rick. I think that's not true. I think that there's a lot of people out there that have very strong feelings for you. I think the comments back in August were misleading and were frankly dishonest. And I think that if you're choosing not to get a vaccination, which the NFL allows for, there's no rule against it, then own up to it. You know, that's what Kirk Cousins did. That's what Carson Wentz did. You know, these are also high-profile quarterbacks, not necessarily as high-profile as Aaron Rodgers, but know, they were very open and about their resistance to getting a vaccine, had their reasons for it, and we moved on. And,
I feel like Rodgers watched what Kirk Cousins went through and went, "I'm good. I'm gonna stay in the shadows."
Yeah, I suppose. I think that he doesn't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. I want to say he doesn't owe us anything. I mean, he does. I have a hard time with when you're in a team sport, when you're in this mode of when there's a league-wide recognition that you are contenders to win the whole thing, and Aaron Rodgers knows very well that he's the key to that. I have a hard time understanding why there wasn't more concern about at least following protocol for the unvaccinated players. It just seems odd to me. So it just seems like there was not. It just wasn't as big of a priority for him.
Well, and kind of funny too. I wonder if some of the animosity between the team and Rodgers stems from this. Just back in preseason. They don't expose that to the public at that point, but maybe some of that I want to leave the team was based on the vaccine. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. There's other unvaccinated players on the Packers. I don't think that's it. I don't think that the locker room cares whether he's vaccinated or not. I think that they care about is that he's missing games and that, the attention to what has happened and his apparent misleading comments back in August, I think that's changed the dynamic a little bit. So, I don't know, whatever. Winning heals everything, so we'll see what happens in Seattle.
Yeah, and losing with Jordan Love the way they did, you know, heals a lot of what Rodgers, whatever Rodgers says, we're not going to care.
He's just not a good quarterback. I mean, it's just, you know, it's funny, though, when you look at Justin Fields, who is infinitely more talented than Jordan Love, Justin Fields, starting quarterback for the Bears, he's infinitely more talented than Jordan Love, and his start against the Browns was like, what, 9 sacks or 10 sacks or something like that?
Yeah.
But they did the same thing. They blitzed him every single time, or half the time, essentially, and got him down over and over and over again, and he had the worst quarterback rating in basically the history of mankind. So, arguably a better start than that, but yeah, he was terrible.
That's Mayor Mitch Reynolds. This is Sports Talk PM here in La Crosse.
Yeah, Sports Talk PM.
Just exactly. Wanted to get it out. What? Obviously, city council meeting is on Thursday. We could talk a little bit about that. Yep. We got a couple of Mitch's favorite callers waiting on hold that I'll bring on in a minute.
Awesome.
But Brad's got to do the news. Hold tight. All right, welcome back to WIZM, La Crosse Talk PM, 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. Mayor Mitch Reynolds joining us. 7 months on the job now. I just do that every month. I'm just going to keep counting up so you know exactly how many months you've been working. And as your approval rating has plummeted over the last week. Because of the...
No doubt. Absolutely. Yeah, it's not quite 7 months, but it's getting close. Yeah.
Around 7 months, huh?
Yeah, six months and 3 weeks or something like that.
Oh, so you're not counting at least.
No, not at all.
well, you know, being this long on a new job, I guess, you know, as we can just do the whole general, is there any, you covered the, it's not like you didn't cover the mayor's office for a decade here, right, at WISM. So
at least, yeah.
But doing that, you probably already know some of the things that maybe the general public wouldn't know, but is there anything that really has jumped off? Like, oh, bleep, I have to, you know, this is a thing that I have to do.
Oh, no, I don't think so necessarily. I mean, there's things that I always knew that have become much more, well, I'd say personal, I guess, since I became mayor. But the mayors in the past would talk about the extraordinary numbers of committees and boards and commissions and all of that, and just talk about it in the abstract, it sort of remained that way for me because it was, you know, there was, It seemed like a lot, but when you get into office and you're sinking teeth into it, you're thinking, "Holy crap, that's a lot of different committees," most of which are not necessary by virtue of state statute, but something that city councils in the past have created and mayors in the past have created in order to, in some way, just defer or abdicate responsibility. And, you know, I don't know if this is something that is, there has, for the former mayor did a you know, pushed forward with an audit of these committees, and there were some that were removed and things like that. So that's a possibility. I think that that's one of those things that when I look at some of the inefficiencies of government, having never been in government, having never been elected to office, not a politician in any kind of way, but one of the things that I look at this as more someone with an MBA coming from a private industry and looking at government, thinking, how can we become more efficient? One of the ways you don't become more efficient is create more committees so that there are more steps to go through, more hoops to jump through in order to come to business decisions. And that's exactly what we have in place here in La Crosse. And hopefully we can find ways to adjust that in the future.
Yeah, I always complain about, and even just the city council meeting, if you look at the agenda, there's so many things on the agenda. And, the wording, not always great. You tried to address that. I think last month we talked about you trying to address that. And talking to city council members, they're like, hey, maybe we could take on some of this. Every once in a while, Mitch, some of those agenda items have like one of the PDFs really just very easily defines whatever the agenda item is. But other ones are just really confusing and like, what? Mm-hmm. And you get that stupid state word government terminology, the whereas and, whatever, the one that you can't decipher. What's going on here? I don't understand. Any movement on that? Just either talking with city council? Hey, if you're the author of a bill that makes it to a committee meeting, you also have to just write a couple paragraphs describing what the hell is the bill about.
I mean, that is a goal. There's no question. I mean, the recitals in a resolution are there to make it very clear why we're doing this action. And so sometimes they may seem a little bit obscure or unnecessary, but they create the environment within which we're coming to this decision. So in large part, they're necessary. Some are written better than others, and that's true regardless of the situation. And some, we look in the past at various different resolutions or agreements, contracts, whatever there are that have gone through in the last 6-7 months, some, it's very clear that there's a period of time that things were written very poorly. And there was, there's some not great language, and that happens occasionally, and there occasionally needs some editing and changing, and that happens at the city council level. But yeah, that concise, basically explanation of intent, that's definitely something that's going to be coming.
And when we talk about there being a lot of committees and a lot, maybe one of the agenda items is it has to do with a committee. So it's expanding the racial equity team, which I believe meets, right? Would you call that a committee? I think you would call that, or at least we're calling it a team here. But
let me tell you about that situation, because this is really interesting. Something that after George Floyd, there were some town hall meetings in La Crosse, and the racial equity team was born out of that. And the racial equity team is an entirely employee membership committee. And the intent was the stated intent. I don't know about the implied intent, but the stated intent by the previous administration, previous city council, was to have a group of employees that were looking at racial equity in City Hall and through the rest of the city, and coming up with recommendations for not only the Human Rights Commission, but also creating an equity action plan. And that work is challenging. There weren't any resources for them, financial or otherwise, to really access. And so basically, on your free time, go come up with an equity action plan. So that wasn't a realistic goal based on the membership of the committee. And so the previous chair of the committee, who has now taken another job in a different city, came up with a plan to, because there was so much interest among employees in City Hall, to really create a more equitable city, the request was to expand the committee to accommodate all the individuals who wanted to be involved. And I thought it was a really good idea, because if we're going to ask the employees in the city of La Crosse to be involved in this very important work of creating an equity action plan for the entire city, it's a big burden. Let's add more people who can bear that burden. and who want to. So that's the plan behind that. I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful that we can do what the legislation, original legislation that was adopted last year, intended. It was to come up with this equity action plan to really give the city a path forward so that there is an equitable treatment of all individuals in the city of La Crosse. And I think that by expanding the membership and adding more voices to this team, we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, you're expanding the council's going to vote on expanding it to 14. Yeah. And those 14 people would all be City of La Crosse employees?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? I didn't. This obviously was part of the goals of the previous city council and previous mayor, and I want to honor their intent, but also make it a process that's more functional.
I mean, the next step would be expand it to people outside city government. I don't know.
There's been some questions about that, whether we should do that, and I think that that might be something that we would do. I think that it just depends. I would like to see how this process goes forward, because a lot of what we wanted to do was to look at the, you know, how the city government itself, how the hiring process works within city government, how we are acting in an equitable or non-equitable manner. And I think that from that perspective, it's better for there to be just employees involved.
Yeah, and it's not the same, but it's in a similar light, I think, as with what the county is trying to do with a police board, or you know, at one point it was called like a citizens police board, but it might evolve to more than that. But we see pushback there. I don't know if we're seeing a lot of pushback on a racial equity team.
Nah, not really. No, I don't think so. I think it's an understanding that we have some work to do, and I think that being able to make sure that we have, again, more individuals that are bearing the load of doing this work, I think is a better thing for our city.
All right, that's Mayor Mitch Reynolds. We got to stop for Scott's comment. Brad doing the news. We'll be back after this. All right, welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM, 608-785-7914. If you live in the city and you got a question for La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds, how about that? We'll just put a stipulation on there. Remember that one time when we were doing the show, we made it, women had to call. Women had to call because it was some female issue that we kept getting old men's opinions about during on the phone.
I feel like it was like arbitrary. We just were sick of just hearing men's opinions and wanted women to call.
Right. And we did get some women to call at that point, but you put the blame on me for calling out just having women call. So thanks for that.
I mean, you're an easy target.
When we talked at the top of the hour or the other half of the hour about, you know, new issues that come up that you maybe as a new mayor wouldn't have expected. One of the issues that you probably maybe completely expected to be a thing, and, you know, just talking off the air, you said maybe isn't, fix the roads. Like, I just assume that every day somebody would be calling you about fixing what? La Crosse Street. Why aren't we fixing La Crosse Street? I drove through three potholes. And actually, technically, Mitch, I did get a flat tire on last Thursday. So
I'm sorry for that.
So I'm going to blame you.
No, La Crosse Street's going to be under construction next spring, and South Avenue as well. And that's all happening. We've got a good plan for continuing maintenance and replacement of roads. I mean, I think that, yeah, that was definitely, I expected more complaints about that. But, you know, there'll still be people that will want things fixed, and that's fine. We'll continue to fix roads at a really good pace and try to keep up. I mean, we're under the same restrictions or the same constrictions, I guess, as any other community, and in the upper Midwest especially, we got to deal with a lot more challenges in terms of roads than in other places of the country. But we're gonna do our best to keep up, and I think we're doing a pretty good job. I think, you know, one of the things that I did expect coming in, and one of the things that I talked about before being elected, was how to address the homeless issue in the city of La Crosse, and that has really consumed most of my time since, not most of my time, but the plurality, I guess, of my time since I've been in office is really trying to find ways to address homelessness, not only in the short term, but in the long term as well. We have a tremendous, like, I call it a crisis level of unsheltered population.
So wait a minute. Wait a minute. So what you're doing is diverting away from the fix the roads, very easy to talk to situation, and you're trying to go to this controversial homeless situation. Is that what you're doing to the show right now?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. So public hearing the other night, Kim Cable from Cooley Cap and on the Lacrosse County Board was, you know, she was addressing this issue and talking about in terms of just in context, talking about how we have a population that's twice as big as she's ever seen in her many, many years working with populations that face huge barriers in our community. So that's one of the things that we're dealing with right now. And I think that, again, I've talked about this as my top priority, and I had someone actually question that. Why are we spending so many resources on a relatively small population? And I think that the answers are pretty self-evident. I mean, when you look at a community, I feel like we should judge a community on how it treats its most vulnerable populations. And to me, there's no one that's more vulnerable than those who are A, either living on the street right now, or B, really close to being without a shelter overnight. And I think that we need to address those populations just to as an expression of who we are as human beings and who we are as a community, but also because there's very real impacts that happen socially and economically from having an enormous population of people that are living unsheltered in our community. So that's the type of thing that, you know, I spent a ton of time on, and we've been working on solutions that are short-term for the winter, but long-term over the next many, many years, because this is not a situation that's going away, and we are going to do as much as we can to mitigate it as much as we can, but we know that we've got to... This requires constant maintenance, constant work, constant expenditures, not only at the city and the county, but also should be at the state level. Oh, and just, and if I can just take it aside for just a minute, just it's just embarrassing how little state government cares about, apparently cares about homelessness in the state of Wisconsin. You know, we have the surrounding counties, surrounding communities will pile people in cars and take them to La Crosse and drop them off at shelters because they don't have the resources to do anything else. And yep. This has been going on for years and still goes on.
Yeah, I got a texter just asked what percentage of the population of homeless are local. Very relevant.
Yeah, I mean, define local, because, you know, I was talking to a guy the other day who's been here for 4 years, but, you know, absolutely came here from Racine 4 years ago, right? and there are others. There's other situations. We had a situation where we had a city in Sauk County whose police department drove a woman to Wisconsin Dells and put her on a train with a one-way train ticket. She was facing severe mental health crisis issues, and they're just basically like, yeah, well, it's not our problem anymore. Stop off in La Crosse. Good luck.
So a train ticket to La Crosse.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, the truth is that there are communities around the state of Wisconsin that, it's not just La Crosse, but Eau Claire and Wausau and Madison and Green Bay and Appleton and Milwaukee, these regional urban centers that have some resources to address issues like this. And we have these outlying counties and communities that don't have those resources and feel like it's a better for them, a better strategy to just ship people out and hope for the best. And that's fine. We're going to keep helping. And I wish there was a more of a statewide solution, and there's not, because of the lack of leadership in our state legislature right now. I don't even know the last time I saw a bill that came through that addressed homelessness, it was to make homelessness illegal. So super excited
Well, we got
not thrilled about a lack of progress there.
I mean, we are addressing issues that matter to the state right now, Mitch. We need to hunt cranes and critical race theory. So, I mean,
yeah. So anyway, so on the city council agenda on Thursday, one of the things that we're attempting to do is approve utilizing some federal funding so we can contract with organizations to rent rooms and provide services so that we can, you know, basically address this in the short term and hopefully have something planned for the unsheltered population when we, you know, when we get out of the cold winter months.
Well, another thing on the agenda for Thursday is, isn't it a Mississippi Street apartment complex that's going to partially go directly to helping homeless, making apartments straight up for homeless people, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, and to be fair, like it's a mix, right? It's not just a, you know, we found that the most successful housing developments in terms of addressing affordability are those that are not just focused on affordability, where there we have a mix where you have affordable housing mixed with market rate housing so that you can address the issues of people who can't afford anything, but also those who can afford 50% of the average median income and 80% of the average median income, and also those who can afford, you know, 100% of that. And you mix all those together, and that's where you have the the most success. That mixed with like wraparound services, and for that particular development, this is a development that we're super excited about. 64 units on 4th and Mississippi, and Lutheran Social Services is going to be that wraparound services agent that is partnered with this with the developer, utilizing low income housing tax credits to develop this structure that provides a mix of housing and services and has measurables and deliverables that they're being held, that they'll be held accountable for making sure that we're addressing the social needs of those that are going into this housing.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, it was either 14 or 17 units would be dedicated to homelessness. Or
yeah, it's something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but it sounds right. Yeah.
And then I'm getting a text question here that says, what about mental health help and resources there? I mean, these all go hand in hand, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of those wraparound services that, you know, and we have other long-term plans that we're working on as well. And the key, Rick, is to get upstream so that you're heading off outcomes downstream, right? So if our negative outcomes downstream are people living in a park in a tent, we want to get upstream of that and figure out how to address those issues before they become these sorts of challenges. And that's what that mental health aspect is like. Well, how can we get to that point where really addressing this community health issue of mental health and then getting partners together, getting all this community of partners together. And I'm just, you know, again, we got these huge, obviously, medical facilities here in our city that really are just hoping for direction, I think. It seems like.
Well, they just opened that Reach facility, right? And then there's, you know, multiple other facilities. Where are we on a homeless coordinator? The city is trying to do that, right? To kind of coordinate all these facilities and people and every, you know, everything into one situation, right?
Yeah, and I should be able to announce a hire here pretty soon. I think that we're... I believe there was an individual, you know, this is a day-to-day thing that I'm frankly just not involved in, you know, but there's a hiring process that's gone on. I know that there's been an individual identified. I think there's been an offer made. I'm not sure. I think there's, you know, there's background checks and all the things that go along with working in high capacity in government. So we should be able to announce something here relatively soon. So that person is coming on board, and that's a great opportunity for the city to really take a leadership role, a comprehensive leadership role, in really coordinating all the efforts of all these, not only these service agencies, but then also engaging the county and then figuring out how the city resources fit into all that. And then also engaging with maybe private landowners. And, you know, somebody asked me today, why don't we get the churches involved? You know, there's not a single church that has come to me and said, hey, can we help? So maybe the homeless services coordinator can be the outreach person for our for our faith community and say, hey, man, you want to step forward a little bit and see what you can do?
Well, and then also the state, right? They could talk to the state about making this an issue statewide.
That's a lobbying, a part of that job. That person can then, and this is going to be a full-time person that's engaged in this constantly, because the impacts on the community are something that require a full-time person. It's not just the, you know, we think about those 120, 130 people that are chronically homeless, and then I don't know how many, couple hundred, 300 others that are close to that. Not chronically, but can be homeless at any given time, or maybe it's more than that. But we're also thinking about the impacts of our community as a whole. How does it, when you think about it, how does it feel when you see, when you go downtown, you see people in Cameron Park in tents or sleeping on benches and things? What does that feel like, a community? It feels like we're not, like we're failing. It feels like we're failing.
Well,
this is something that will help us to mitigate that.
I feel like we just disassociate with it. We kind of, if we're, you know, driving by or boating by Huska Park and we point to the tents, it's like kind of almost I don't know how to take it. It's almost like those people over there, and it's like, well, those people over there, life is going to get a lot harder here in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's funny how many... it's funny. I was just thinking, well, so Veterans Day is this week, right? On Thursday, we have Veterans Day. And it's remarkable how many veterans I've spoken to that are, you know, they're living on the street, that are living in Huska Park, that are or not, you know, living elsewhere. And we give a lot of recognition to, it's not just people over there. We talk about veterans, how we need to support veterans, how important veterans are. But we can point to significant failures by our federal government, our state government, and then all the rest of us for actually caring for our veterans. And then they should not just be people over there. There should be people that we have sworn to support after they're serving their duty for the United States of America. And we are not doing a good job at that.
We did have a story, and I'm trying to find it, but I can't. Oh, here it is. You know, you talk about homeless, and then not everybody is homeless, but they're on the brink of homeless. Well, we addressed this in the school board meeting the other day. It's like over half of the state figures show over half of the kids at the La Crosse School District are, you know, in this economically disadvantaged category. Over half. That seems crazy to me.
I know. Yeah, I mean, we have. I mean, we face challenges here. There's no question. Absolutely.
And we think, and I would say, if you want to think about La Crosse as a whole, hey, La Crosse doing pretty well as a city, as a, you know, as a society. I think it's pretty decent to live here. And then you see the number like that, like over 52% of students in the La Crosse School District are economically disadvantaged.
Yeah, I don't have access to those numbers right off the top of my head, but I will say that, you know, it's perpetually over the years we've seen. Those who are eligible for free and reduced lunch, obviously, the numbers are extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. And they point to the high levels of at or near or slightly above poverty that we have among certain populations within the city of La Crosse. And no, to your point, it's a challenge. I mean, it's something that that as a city we need to overcome, and we need to spend more time and effort addressing, no question.
Number three is calling in. Number three, go ahead. You're on the air with Mitch.
I've been sitting at 201 State Street banging on the door. I got chicken and beer for you guys.
there's only one of us in here, so more for me, I guess.
No wonder my foot is sore. What, you mean Mitch ain't there tonight?
He's on the phone.
He's on the phone. Okay. See,
yeah,
Mitch, we've been talking about this homeless situation for years, and it seems like to me the more we accommodate things for people, the more people come here, like you said, from other cities.
Yeah.
I don't see ourselves ever getting ahead.
I mean, and I appreciate that. That's a huge conundrum question. The problem is, and man, I don't disagree that is a severe challenge that we're facing, is that the more accommodating and the more welcoming we are and the more willing we are to put resources into addressing the issues related to homelessness, the more likely people are going to come here looking to be to get help. Frankly, it's just true. I don't have anything to say about the criticism other than it's absolutely true.
It's kind of a weird it's kind of a weird position to put in. Like, oh my God, we can't be the city that people look for as a leader in helping others. You know, like, yeah, or we can't.
I just can't do that. There's nothing that I cannot. I am not the person who is wired to say no to people who are vulnerable. I am the person who is wired to say, how can I help you? And I don't know. I think that the end game has to be the pathetic level of leadership in Madison getting better, frankly. It's got to be that. It's got to be more of an understanding that there has to be resources provided to counties and small cities and towns and wherever else. There are people that are struggling with addiction and mental health issues and all the upstream issues that eventually lead to some level of homelessness. There's got to be resources that come from other than taxpayers in the city of La Crosse. It's not fair. It's not reasonable. It's not just. And it's ridiculous that there is not more leadership on this from Madison. It really is. And, you know, to a certain extent from the federal government as well. I mean, that's a you know, bigger situation, but we just have, it's just been years and years, as number three said, it's been years and years of frankly ignoring and hoping it'll go away, hoping that we'll have these urban centers like La Crosse and Eau Claire and Green Bay and Milwaukee and Appleton and Wausau and all these other places are doing some remarkable work in relation to homelessness and just hoping they'll deal with it all.
All right.
Anyway, go ahead.
I want to get Kent in here. Kent's been waiting. Kent, you got it. Go ahead real quick.
Hey, Mayor Mitch, Kent, the mayor of the North Side, calling from my office at the abandoned Burger King on George Street. How you doing tonight?
Can't wait till that place comes down. Anyway, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, talking about just, you know, the situation with the homeless, you know, I feel for everyone in that situation. Like you said, a lot of mental health issues, drug addiction. Some of these people don't want to get off the drugs. That's why they can't go to the Salvation Army. But there's a good majority that are good people or caught up in the situation. And I even see houses around La Crosse, Mayor, that, you know, it says condemned. It might have been a drug house. I don't know what they are. They don't look condemned to me. Maybe we could partner with Menards or Habitat for Humanity. You know, you could have a good spokesperson talk with the owner of Menards and say, hey, donate us some wooden nails, some drywall. Take the people out of Hootska Park or any park that want to, you know, and build these houses up for them so they have somewhere to live.
Yeah, I think that's great, and I do appreciate that, and I think it's a great way to, we can look at reallocating spaces, and, you know, one of the key things, Rick, and I'm gonna.
You got him. You got like
we talk about solutions.
You got like a minute.
I get some minutes, but. You know, building more housing is key. Developing more housing is key. Whether it's in Train Plant 6, with I think it's called Fifth Ward Ordinances, Fifth Ward Residences, the 4th Mississippi Place, the River Point District, building more housing is key. Building up the supply in the market so to decrease the demand so that we have a better balance of vacancy within the city of La Crosse, it's the market solution for the dilemma that we're in right now. And right. I'm going to continue to pursue that as much as I can.
All right. La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. Thanks a lot, man.
Amen. See you.